How's your show doing?
How terrifying.
Quiet, please. Ladies and gentlemen, we were going to call this baseball Cracker Barrel session Tallulah and her friends. But the arguments have gotten so violent, I doubt whether they're her friends anymore. Our title was to be the most exciting baseball play I've ever seen. So let me just introduce the people who are here and let them take it from there. This station, in cooperation with your unit of the American Cancer Society, is pleased to present transcribed the one and only Tallulah Bankhead, baseball's all-time great shortstop, Yankee star Phil Rizzuto, the clown prince of baseball, Al Schacht, and irrepressible New York Times sports writer, Lou Effret. Now, Tallulah, you were saying...
Well, darling, I was just asking Lou a question, and I think we'll take it up from there, if you don't mind, darling. Lou Effret from the New York Times. You were just beginning to tell us what you considered the greatest play you'd ever seen in baseball.
Yes, Tallulah, I had in mind a play which concerned the great Joe DiMaggio.
Lou, you mean the one where Hank Greenberg hit that ball out in the Monument?
No, Phil, this was something which came a number of years later. It happened at Fenway Park in 1949, I believe. And from that night on, the Yankees went on to win 5 consecutive pennants in the American League and 5 World Championships. It's history now that in 1949, Joe DiMaggio missed the first 65 ball games of that season. He had a spur in his heel. He had to go to Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, had it operated on twice, and there was that question, does Joe DiMaggio still have it? He flew up to Boston, came to bat the first time, and I know for one, I should be impartial as a Times man, as a sports writer, but secretly and inwardly, I was rooting hard for Jolton Joe.
You don't mind if I can't be impartial, do you?
I know, Miss Bankhead.
Call me Tallulah.
Well, the big question was, does he still have it? He got up there, and I think it was Maury McDermott was the pitcher, the left-hander. And the first time at bat, Joe DiMaggio lashed what should be called a Joe DiMaggio single. Typical characteristic, a screaming line drive over the shortstop's head into left field. That was a 3-game series. He went on to hit 4 homers and another single, batted in 6 runs. 3 games, 6 hits, 6 RBIs, 4 homers. But to me, the most exciting play in baseball that I've seen in, 30 years was that first single. I knew that Joe DiMaggio had come back.
Well, that's very wonderful and thrilling. Well, my tragedy is, if it's my turn, that I miss all the great plays mostly because I either have a matinee. If they're night games, I might be playing. I might be out of the state of the plays. For instance, this summer, when I was doing the summer theaters in Dear Charles, I was in New England. And now that the Braves have gone to Milwaukee, they only really report the Red Sox game, you see. And you know I'm a National Leaguer. Mm-hmm. I love you, though, darling, Phil. And I know what a great, great player you are. But the greatest play I saw, probably emotionally in every way, and, of course, you know what I feel about Willie Mays, but I don't want to switch from the subject. And I must say, I have to be honest, I have had a little research on this because I'm so bad at names and dates and statistics, I can't even pronounce the word. But this happened in the playoff of the World Series in October 3rd, 1951. And this is what I'm going to read off, if you'll forgive me, because I couldn't look at that time, so I had to have the record books help me out. But it was the third game of the playoff of the series between the Giants and the Dodgers, who tied for the pennant in the regular 154 game, you remember? And the Giants won first game at Ebbets Field, 3-1. The Dodgers won the second game at the Polo Grounds, 10-0. Ha, ha, ha. And the Dodgers went into the last of the ninth inning, 4-1. You remember that,
yeah,
don't
sure
you? And had routed Sal Madley, my baby, and Newcomb pitching for the Dodgers, Dark single, Mueller single, and Irving. By the way, Irving, Monty Irving comes from Alabama, where I come
yes,
from.
Yes, but drop the G, Tallulah. It's
Irving. Well, it's written badly here, darling. I told you these names and dates I'm reading off. Well, anyway, Irving popped out to Hodges. And it's here it says Hodges, so you see, I do know a lot of typographical errors here. But then Lachman doubled. Well, get to the point. It doesn't matter anyway. And Mueller was on third with Thompson coming up, and Newcomb was taken out for Branca. And I always feel so sorry for Branca. I pray always he'll have a comeback, and I think he will, don't you?
Oh, definitely.
Well, Thompson hit third pitch on the line into the left field stands, you all know. Well, here's the awful part. I left my television room. I was so nervous I couldn't stand it. I missed that home run, but I had the radios going in all the other rooms, and I rushed up the stairs, but I did see Leo and
Stanky
rolling on the ground and carrying off our darling Bobby, you know, on their shoulders. But that, to me, was the most exciting thing. But wasn't it just typical of me to have to miss it? I couldn't stand the nervous strain, you know. So that's... I knew the part of the story was this, which I think is terribly funny. But about that time that afternoon, which is a true story, the Lone Ranger and his white horse Silver were playing at the Madison Square Garden and performing in the rodeo audience there. The Lone Ranger executed a very fancy maneuver, you know, on Silver, and he was greeted with hysterical applause, which rapidly spread through the garden. Well, startled at this kind of rare ovation, he jumped from Silver and kept taking these sweeping bow to admirers. Well, it really turned out later that he'd learned that the cheering had been caused by Tarleton's home run, because everyone at Madison Square Garden had these little baby radios, and they were listening to that home run thing by Bobby Thompson. So I think that's rather sad for poor Lone Ranger and Silver, don't you? But very happy for Giant fans.
And rather sad for Ralph Branca, too, Tallulah, who incidentally insists to this very day, just 2 days ago, that it was a perfect pitch that he had made, the one that Bobby Thompson hit for the homer, high and inside, and he said if he had to throw it again under a similar circumstance tomorrow, he would do it.
Well, you see, you're a technical expert and all, and I'm the emotional one, so I'm sure that's true, but I think it's a terrible psychological thing he's had to bear, you know?
Well, I think he's lived it down.
Good, I'm so glad.
We have more time here, and someone has just started to speak who hasn't said a word so far. We're going to get around to you, Al Shank, in just a moment. But I would like to break in for a moment because, as you all know, we're here to help in the American Cancer Society's 1955 crusade. And I think Phil Rizzuto had something he wanted to say right here.
I guess the reason I want to see cancer conquered is because of the people I knew who died of it. You think of the Yankees and cancer, and probably you think of the Babe Ruth. I also think of Steve Sundra. Steve was a good pitcher, and he was a good friend of mine. He was just a young fellow, too, and he died of cancer. All right, what are we going to do about this vicious thing? The American Cancer Society says cancer's going to strike 40 million people now living in America. That means every one of us has to help support the life-saving work the American Cancer Society does, the research and the programs of education and service. Do your part and give to your unit of the society. Mail your contribution today to Cancer, care of your local post office. That's Cancer, care of your local post office.
Thank you, Phil Rizzuto. And now to continue this round table on sports, we were just about to hear from someone who had been saving up a lot of breath in the first part of our show and was about to let it out with some very fine words, Mr. Al Shank. So, Clown Prince, take it over.
You mean intellectual words? When Lou was talking about a perfect pitch by Branca just a few moments ago, it really was a perfect pitch. I saw it. It was a perfect pitch for Thompson, the way it turned out. Mm-hmm. Now, we were talking about great plays. I'd like to get my nose in this thing.
That sounds like a...
When I say get my nose, I'm going to make a big play here. In 1933, while I was with the Washington Club, we come into New York fighting for the pennant. In the seventh inning of the game. Now, when I said I was with the Washington Club and I mentioned the seventh inning, that means I wasn't pitching. I was a coach of the club because I was a one-inning pitcher. And I love that hot water, Tallulah. Get it early. Well, this is an important game, and Lou Gehrig, soul rest in peace, was on second base. He was a runner. Dixie Walker's runner on first base. There was nobody out at the time. We were one run to the good. Lazzeri hits a ball to right center. Sam Rice was running for the ball and looked like he might catch it. The ball drops safely. So Gehrig starts off a home plate. Sewell receives the ball from Cronin, who got it from Rice. And Gehrig knocks Sewell out of the play, hitting him very hard. And here comes Walker right behind him. He's running with him. Sewell tags Gehrig. Gehrig knocks him about 3 feet from home plate. And Sewell recovers his feet, turns around, and touches Walker for a double play. And Lazzeri headed to second base on the throw. We almost got Lazzeri for a triple play. But that play put us ahead in the pennant, made a two out that play, and we won that ball game. In fact, we won the pennant. That was the greatest play I ever saw.
Was that 1933, Al?
Yes, sir.
That was the year you led the league in early showers.
I wasn't pitching then. The year I led the league in early showers was in 1910.
That's 1910. I was born in 1910. I wouldn't remember that.
Well, I was the same fella.
Because I started being a baseball fan in 1939. I'm ashamed to say.
Well, how about Phil Rizzuto? Phil,
yeah,
I've seen
you
in
Phil?
So
what
many
was your
exciting
players. You've been in baseball about 62 years. How about that?
Well, I have seen quite a few of them. You know, I was going to say Willie Mays' catch in the World Series, but I know Tallulah will be happy about that, but Willie said it was such an easy catch that I've changed my mind. It must have been easy for Willie.
Willie said, I don't compare them, I make them.
that's
the catches.
Right, yeah.
Look,
Phil,
darling, let's not be so modest. Tell us what you think is your greatest play. And
well, no, it wasn't my play. I had nothing to do with it.
But you have made
a
great play.
Well, I did. Let me tell you the one that really scared me and got me the most excited, and it was just a routine pop fly. It was in the World Series against the Brooklyn Dodgers, if you remember. Billy Martin's last year before he went in the service. I believe that was 1952, right, Lou? And there were two out in the seventh inning, and we were two runs ahead. And the Dodgers had men on first and second, Jackie Robinson up. He hit an ordinary little pop fly between the pitcher and first base. With two out, everybody was running. And Joe Collins lost the ball in the sun over the grandstand in Ebbets Field. He just stood stock still, couldn't move. And Billy Martin, at the last minute, came running like a streak of lightning. His hat fell out from under him. And all of us other infielders just standing there with our mouth wide open. Billy caught the ball about an inch from the ground, did a tumble salt. And actually, it saved us the ball game because the two runs would have scored. Robinson would have been on third, and they might have got the winning running.
Well, wasn't that the final game?
That was the final game.
Lost the World Championship.
Right. Darlings, all three of you must have seen this, I hope, but I missed it up. Speaking of Willie Mays, that wonderful catch, which I hear about, didn't see, but I had met Willie, and we did a recording once together, and he said that they have it on a film, so maybe I'll be able to get it. The great catch he made with one hand and caught his cap on the other.
I did see him catch a ball in Pittsburgh barehanded, overran the ball, and caught the ball with his bare hand.
Well, that was something like it in the World Series. I had a matinee that day, and I came off the first or second act, and everyone was screaming because I have great Giant fans in the company, too. I think that's why they're in the company.
Of Giants, Tallulah, you spoke about the 1951 World Series. I would like to ask Phil Rizzuto, because he was the party of the second part in a little act called the famous dropkick by Eddie Stanky.
Don't mention that name, Stanky. You've got to give him a lot of credit, Lou, because he uses his head.
But what about Monty stealing home in the first inning? That was the most
exciting. Let's not talk
thing.
About that. The Yankees did a few good
darling,
things,
five
too.
Straight. You're safe with that record for many years. I think we'll win four straight, but I don't dare say five.
You know, speaking of Stanky, Lou, remember what Branch Rickey said about him? He couldn't hit, run, field, or throw. And he's been in the big leagues for over 10 years, and he's a manager now.
My wife says the same thing about me.
Well, I had a great curveball, I had a great fastball, I had a great slow ball, I had a great change of pace, I had great control, but I couldn't pitch.
Well, the great play, I really did see. It wasn't an important game at the time, but every Giant fan in every game they play is like your great Yankee fan.
Are you a Giant rooter?
No, I'm a Republican, too, in case you didn't know. But I was a night game between the Giants and Pittsburgh. And I remember that Hank Greenberg was there. It was the 12th inning, and the bases were loaded. It was Willard Marshall who made this fantastic catch. You know where the clock is in the Polo Grounds. Uh-huh. It would have been an in-the-field home run. And that was the greatest catch I personally ever saw when I was in the park. Sometimes I don't think you get the same perspective if you're watching it on TV.
No.
And I've lived in the... Oh, excuse me.
I hate to break in right here, but I guess I'm going to have to throw you all a curve because time's running out. Tallulah, you did have one last thing to say, didn't you?
We all get asked to do the impossible sometimes. I know I've rooted for my Giants to do the impossible out on the ball field, and they've done it. In my own profession, actors and actresses are called on to go out and perform in the middle of great personal tragedies, and we try to do it. In fact, we do it. Today, everyone is asking our research scientists what just a few years ago seemed to be an almost impossible job. We're asking them to conquer cancer, and it looks as though they'll do it. The situation is becoming hopeful. Already, doctors have the tools to cure many types of cancer. But if no further progress is made, 24 million people now living in America will die of this terrible disease. Through the American Cancer Society, we must all see that researchers have the funds they need. Delay will mean additional lives lost. So please give generously to your unit of the American Cancer Society. Mail your contribution to cancer, care of your local post office. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tallulah. Now, on behalf of the American Cancer Society, may I thank all of you for this wonderful quarter hour. Tallulah Bankhead, Phil Rizzuto, Al Schacht, and Lou Effret. Remember, cancer strikes one in four. Strike back by supporting your unit of the American Cancer Society. Mail your contribution to Cancer, care of your local post office. This program was presented transcribed by this station in the interest of public service. Mort Lawrence speaking.